This is Rosemary Hall, recording on behalf of the Dialect and Heritage Project for the University of Leeds. It's Thursday the 8th of September 2022, and could I ask you please to introduce yourself?
Yes, hello, I'm Robin Wiltshire, former LAVC archivist, I guess I could describe myself as, yes, yeah.
And how did you come to be in that position, Robin?
Okay, well, I'd been working with John Widdowson at the University of Sheffield. By the time the LAVC project sort of started, I'd been with John in Sheffield best part of 10 years as a volunteer initially. And then John managed to find some funding to support a part-time post at what was then called the Centre for English Cultural Tradition and Language, SECTAL. And I worked there with the research collections that had been created by students studying through the centre, as well as working on sort of outreach work in the museum that John had for the sort of the sort of material culture collections that he and Paul Smith had amassed over the years. So I did a bit of outreach work there with school groups and things like that. And I'd found John initially because, having done my first degree, I did a master's degree through Birmingham University in heritage management with a view to getting into heritage work, museum work. And after a few applications and interviews, and it wasn't really going anywhere, I decided I would just look for any sort of voluntary work within Sheffield, because I had to sort of be back at Sheffield living at home at that point. And went to the Voluntary Services Bureau in Sheffield, and they had leaflets for this traditional heritage museum. So that's how I first met John. And then it sort of went from there, and working at the centre as a volunteer. And that's when Julia came on the scene as well. I met her there. Started to sort of realise that I liked working with archives rather than a sort of museum orientated sort of career. So it was during that time that I started a 4-year part-time professional qualification to become a qualified archivist, and that was done through the Society of Archivists, as it was then known. And so I was doing that part-time, it was a distance learning thing, whilst also working with John. And that was very rewarding. It was a nice sort of community of people, postgrads as well, working with them, helped John organise a few conferences. The Folklore Society in, can't remember which year, had their first ever conference outside of London at Sheffield. And just the material that I was working with, I very much enjoyed. It's a sort of multiple media collection, so it's all sorts of materials created through people's field work, so the audio material, as well as any written stuff, photographs. So it's lots of different types of materials, which I found interesting. But I just found the subject interesting anyway, and realised that the subject of folklore and folklore studies, and just the study of people and their different beliefs and activities and whatever, it just very interested me. So it was an ideal match, really, as I realised that I was an archivist. So yeah, that was about 10 years or so of sort of working along like that. And John, sort of bless him, had tried as much as he could to sort of support me financially, to keep me on there. And I was still sort of tootling along in that sort of role when Clive Upton phoned me and said that he had secured some funding, quite a sizable amount, sort of then I think it was £250,000, I think it was, To work on cataloguing the archive of the Institute, which thankfully had been retained after the Institute closed. And I was aware of the Institute and the material that was still at Leeds in the Brotherton. And Clive, I mean, I don't know whether you would say I was headhunted, but he phoned me to sort of say, did I know of anybody who might be interested in the job? He didn't sort of say, knowing full well that I could well be interested in it. So I sort of had to make a decision, really, because I felt quite loyal to John, and was keen still for John and the centre to survive within the university and provide courses which were popular at undergrad and postgrad level. So it was a tricky time, really, because it felt a little bit like I was abandoning John and the centre. But that said, the prospect of 3 years full-time work as an archivist, working with folklore collections, was too good to be true, really, particularly as we sort of had a young family at that time and what have you. So I sort of went for the interview. Clive was there, I can't remember who else was on the interview panel at that time, possibly somebody else from the School of English, I guess it would have been. And yes, fortunately, was offered the job, accepted it. Initially, was travelling to Leeds by train every morning. Didn't have a car at the time, but after a while of sort of lots of delays and getting back home, quite late, decided to buy a car. Travelled up there, getting earlier and earlier in the morning to avoid the traffic. So I was often there a couple of hours before Catherine and Johnny turned up. But that's fine, because as an archivist, I'm quite happy and used to sort of working on my own and just getting my head down. And it was great to be able to just focus and go in each morning thinking I was going to be working with this wonderful material. So getting in that early meant I could leave a bit earlier to go home and pick Natasha up from nursery and what have you. And seemed to hit it off with Catherine, the research assistant, pretty quickly. And we sort of fairly quickly got into a work routine and a sort of plan of campaign, if you like, in terms of how we were going to approach this. I mean, 3 years is a nice time to have. It was good, I think, that Clive managed to sort of get money that covered that sort of period. So it didn't at any point feel like we were rushing, really. I mean, I think overall we probably covered as much as we could. I mean, obviously, subsequent to what we did and like the current project, obviously there were things that we couldn't do in terms of more digitization, shall we say. We did work with the audio tapes, the cassettes, field recordings, and copy those onto mini discs, which I'm sure have long since become obsolescent, and there probably isn't any equipment to play these mini discs on anymore. But that's what we had at the time, and Clive seemed sort of happy with that for at least one copy to be made from the originals.
Sounds as though you knew Clive before.
Yes. I mean, through my work at the centre and John, that's how I got to know Clive. Because Clive and John Widdowson have go back quite a long way, and they've done a lot of work together and publications and things and what have you on the language and dialect side. So yes, I did know of Clive. And yes, I'd probably seen him at conferences and what have you, and he would have given papers and things like that. So yes, him contacting me wasn't entirely out of the blue. Yeah, he was great. I mean, he was very, very committed to the cause, and very focused, but at the same time was happy to let the three of us, you know, he wasn't forever sort of knocking on the door and sort of saying, oh, what are you up to now? And, you know, he trusted us to get on and work through the project. That said, in the early days, was it the early days or was it all the way through? We did have regular sort of progress meetings, and he asked me to sort of do a little summary of what we'd done that week. Whether it sort of lengthened out after that to perhaps every other week, I can't quite remember at the moment. But that would be a meeting with Clive and the man who was working in Special Collections. He was the assistant. I can picture him, but I can't remember his name.
I wonder if you mean Oliver Pickering.
I do indeed mean Oliver Pickering. Thank you. Yes. Lovely man. And he was always present at the meetings as well. So we would talk through where we were at and what we were doing.
And what exactly did your role entail? What was the job description?
Well, basically, it was to... I mean, whilst a lot of the material was already in the Special Collection storage area within the Brotherton, there was a lot of material dotted around in different houses within the School of English on the site. So, yes, the aim was to create a finding aid for the entire sort of archive.
And just to clarify for the tape, what materials are you talking about?
Okay, so this would be the material relating to the Survey of English Dialects. So it's the field recordings, the field notebooks, photographs, all that sort of material relating to the SED, as well as the material created through the lifetime of the Institute of Dialect and Folklife Studies. So that was student material, again, field work. So it was a multiple media sort of collection, if you like, in terms of paper and audio, visual material. And basically getting some intellectual control of all of that and producing a meaningful finding aid so that people could find out and see exactly what was there, with a view to it being sort of utilised as a research resource, really. So the initial sort of work really was, prior to that, was getting some physical control on the material. As I say, quite a lot of it was already stored in Special Collections in their stacks. But what we then went on to do was to identify the material that was dotted around the campus. So I particularly remember the boxes of the original, well, not the, what would they be? They were very thick, hard, sort of shellac discs of SED recordings. Really quite heavy, and these were up in an attic in one of the houses within the School of English. So what we started to do was physically bring stuff together just so that we could assess exactly what was there in terms of extent and format and what have you. And then to sort of formulate a way forward in terms of identifying the different sections within the collection that we would then work through systematically. So obviously the SED was a very large section within the overall. But then breaking it down in terms of the student work, so the dissertations, for example, we identified or created a separate photographic section, which was then worked on, as well as various other series, some of which I probably can't remember at the moment in terms of exactly how many we identified. I know there was quite a bit of stuff that sort of odds and ends and things relating to the Institute. I mean, even down to sort of material that was probably removed from notice boards and things like that. So it was posters or leaflets and things like that that we catalogued. I mean, we were fairly granular into. We had the time to be able to engage with the material at that sort of level. That said, there were times when we had to decide, as time went on, whether we did have the time to go further. So you might find in the catalogue there are some sections that sort of stop at the higher level within the archival hierarchy, if you like, and that we just didn't feel we had the time to go further in terms of describing each individual item. But I think in what we did manage to achieve, from what I remember, I think Clive was more than happy with the finished product. I mean, what we were also tasked with doing was sort of promoting our work and promoting the collection. And one of the ways we did that was the creation of the website, within which the catalogue would sit. So there was some research to do there in terms of creating a sort of an introduction to the history of both the SED and the Institute. And I was looking at the website the other day, and I can't remember, to be honest, reading it, whether I did that or whether that was a joint effort with Catherine. I really can't remember who put that together. But certainly Catherine did a lot of work on the actual website and web publishing or web creation, if you like. She sort of really engaged with that. I'm not particularly technically minded on that front, so I mean, I was happy for her to sort of take that role. I know we did, in terms of the software that was used, we did use encoded archival description, which I think is a sort of system that is still going and used within archive work. But in terms of the actual catalogue and how it would, the front end, if you like, how it would be presented, I know we did travel over to Liverpool on one occasion to visit somebody at the uni there, I guess. My mind is a little bit hazy on this, but there was some link up with Liverpool in terms of the sort of technical side of how the website would be presented and how it worked behind the scenes in terms of the search engine and what have you. Because EAD is very good in the sense of you can tag and use subject tags and things like that and what have you for search purposes. So there was that, which, as I remember it, we sort of managed to sort of pull together quite nicely. It wasn't. I don't remember there being a big rush towards the end. And as it turned out, right at the end, I'd been offered I'd applied for a job here in Sheffield at Shefford Archives, because it was quite near the end, Clive was okay with me applying for that, because again I was fortunate in that was a full-time permanent position, and even then, certainly now, there aren't that many full-time archivist posts that come up, so again I had to make a sort of decision in terms of should I go for that, but again Clive was supportive in that, because by and large at that point, so we're talking I think I started in Sheffield in the May of 2005, so it would have been earlier in 2005 when I was applying, And at that point, also as part of the sort of the remit, we'd organised a fairly sizable conference as a way of sort of rounding off the project, but also to talk about what we'd done and what was now going to be available. And that was really good. I'm not a natural public speaker, so that was a bit nerve-wracking. In fact, in the early days, Clive asked us, in the early stages of the project, Clive asked Catherine and myself to, he brought together all sorts of people from within the university at Leeds, but also other people who had an interest in folklore studies, dialect studies, what have you, to sort of talk about the project and where we were at that early stage and what we were doing. And I do remember Catherine was very nervous at that, and she was very apologetic about their sort of public speaking skills and what have you. And I wasn't much better, but we managed, I think, and it was good to sort of be seen, I guess, so that people knew what we were doing. But at the other end of the project, yes, there was the large conference which drew people from all over who had an interest, but some people who knew of the Institute, who'd either worked at the Institute or had studied at the Institute as postgrads or whatever.
What was the name of the conference?
Oh gosh, what did we call it? I can't remember, I'm afraid. No, what do we... I mean, it probably had Leeds Archive of Vernacular Culture in the title somewhere. And whether it was recorded? Now then, what did we do? Catherine, I think, possibly did... I think we might have pulled together the various papers that were given. And I think they might have been added to the website. Did she do that? 'Cause Johnny Robinson spoke. I certainly remember John Widdowson spoke. Did Clive? Can't remember. Catherine and I obviously did. I think Stuart Sanderson came, who was the former director, was that the title of the Institute? He was there, and I think he spoke about the history of the Institute. And it was well attended. I mean, I remember the lecture theatre was full. So that was a nice way to sort of round it off. But there'd been other times where, again, as part of the ongoing project, in terms of progress, I remember one time we gave a talk on what we were doing to various... Well, I know that, say, the Pro Vice-Chancellor was there. It was sort of... I don't know what you describe, not dignitaries, but, you know, people like that from the university, just to sort of keep the work we were doing in the mind's eye. And I know Melvin Bragg was there because he, what was his connection with the university? I think he might have been, was he a vice chancellor or a pro vice chancellor or had in some capacity. Unfortunately, he had to leave a bit early to catch a train, but he was there to begin with. So yeah, we use that as another good sort of opportunity, really, to raise the profile of what we were doing, really.
Do you, Catherine and Johnny, all start at the same time?
Catherine and I started together, and then Johnny, I can't even remember whether, yes, I suppose Johnny's position would have been there originally, but I can't remember the reason why, but no, he didn't start exactly when we did. He came in, I don't know how long after we'd got started, a few months possibly. Yes, I can't remember when exactly he started. But yeah, I mean, we all, from how I remember it, we all got on very well and worked well. Obviously, he had particular expertise that he could bring and knowledge about on the language and dialect side. And obviously, I had my sort of fledgling archivist hat on then. I mean, when did I finish my course? yes, I actually sort of qualified in 2000, so I'd only had a couple of years sort of working in Sheffield, and then all of a sudden had this large archive to deal with. But as I said, it was good to know that we had the time in which to sort of approach it and sort of properly set out a way forward, really, in terms of how we were going to approach things. And how we apportioned what we would do, I can't honestly remember. I mean, certainly because of his knowledge, Johnny sort of slotted in nicely in terms of the SED material and his work going through the notebooks particularly. I remember he worked on those and pulling out examples of what did you call it, incidental material and that sort of stuff. So that sort of fitted nicely. And Catherine was very good to sort of work with in terms of any suggestions I made in terms of how we might approach things. She didn't have an archival background, so there was work there to explain how I was approaching how we would sort of represent the structure of the archive, if you like, in terms of the collection level and then the constituent series and sections that fit within that, and basically how we would sort of bring together intellectually the material. But as I said earlier, there was a lot of physical work as well, and archive work often can be a very physical job.
Can you tell me more about what was where that wasn't already in special collections?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I think I started to say about the discs. They were that was up in an attic room in one of the houses that the School of English have on site there. That was the main thing. There were. I'm trying to think whether all the notebooks were spread around somewhere as well. And then there was tapes we found, not the student tapes, but it was all sorts of language recordings. And it was tricky because I didn't know whether these were sort of original ones or whether they were copies that had been made for use or copies of copies. And they were boxed up in different places. I mean, archives, again, in my experience now, you know, often end either very high up in an attic or low down in a cellar or something. So they're either in something way too hot, something is too damp and cold. But so it's often the archivist's job to sort of retrieve them from that and sort of get them into more suitable storage conditions, really. But yes, these boxes of tapes, I remember coming across, because I thought, oh, blimey, what am I going to do with these? It was, I assume, a copy, but at the time I thought, well, this can't be the original. Stanley Ellis was obviously sent tapes of the recordings of the what turned out to be the hoax recordings of the Yorkshire Ripper recording, the North East person who purporting to be the Yorkshire Ripper. And evidently, I think he'd been involved in sort of analysing the speech and what have you. So that was sort of, wow, are these the originals or what? Yeah. So I don't think ultimately those we sort of felt we needed to sort of incorporate into the LAVC. So there were little things like that. I know a lot of the undergraduate, you know, the institute research dissertations and essays and what have you, those were already in special collections, but they were taking up an awful lot of space because each student had sort of put them in clip files or in lever arch folders and what have you. I mean, the PhDs were bound, but a lot of the smaller stuff was in these files. So again, in terms of sort of getting some sort of physical control, I took all of those out of the folders and we put them into archival quality enclosures, and then boxed them in the archive quality boxes, because there was, I think, within the grant, you know, the funding, there was some money for materials. So we could purchase the proper archive quality boxes. I think we did get some polyester sleeves as well to put the photographs in, I think. Although whether we were able to get every last single one in, again, I'm afraid I can't remember. So that was good in the sense of just sort of bringing down the size of the holdings, really. Because once you get things out of bulky folders and file clip files and what have you, it does bring down the bulk somewhat. And then, yes, gradually bringing things like the disc recordings into special collections as well, so they were physically there. I think those were one of the areas where we felt we just didn't have the capacity to sort of catalogue those individually. I think also it was felt possibly that, because I think some of the SED recordings were sort of produced, published commercially. I think there was a tape. I always remember the first one. It was probably Stanley Eyre saying "Shap in the old county of Westmorland." that was the only one. The number of times I heard that. Anyway, so yeah, I think those were part of the sort of series that we felt we couldn't go much further with, other than bringing them together and sort of making a note of how many they were and what have you. And certainly we didn't have the means to sort of make any recordings from those, make any surrogates or whatever. So in terms of where there was other material, I'm struggling to remember at the moment. I think it probably was some of the School of English houses that we had to sort of up and down steep stairs and what have you to bring them. And then where we worked in terms of, I mean, that was part of the huff and puff of stuff as well. The room that we had as the sort of project room was in the cellar room. It had been sort of all kitted out and was obviously used as a seminar room or something in the School of English. I forget which number house we were in. So we had that as the sort of the project HQ, if you like, and all three of us worked down there, and computers were made available for us, and we had our mini disc equipment there. And I think what we would do is we would take stuff there to work on if we knew we were going to be working on it for any length of time. I mean, I do remember cataloguing all the dissertations and what have you, but working in special collections rather than carting that all over to number whatever it was. So we had a workspace in special collections. So I was able to sort of catalogue straight onto our system, really. And that was a room I seem to remember. I think there were various other library staff there, and also the conservator was based there, because I know we did have dealings with the conservator on occasions. By and large, that was working with her in terms of sourcing storage materials, so boxes and sleeves and what have you, unfolded all of archival quality. And she was very good, because I think she ordered those things in for us, and they delivered straight to special collections. We didn't really have any work with her in terms of any actual conservation work, in terms of repairs and what have you, because given the age of the Institute, shall we say, we're talking comparatively recent material, so there wasn't a lot of damage to be dealt with, really. I think some of the discs we may have found, there were cracked discs and what have you, but that would have been another whole sort of project, really, in terms of doing that.
Was there any type of material you particularly enjoyed working with?
I mean, the photographs are fascinating. Catherine, I can't remember if I've said, I mean, she had a particular interest in photography and was a sort of keen photographer herself. So Catherine tended to work on the photographs. I mean, we discussed how we were going to approach it and how we were going to number them and label them and what have you and reference them. But there's some wonderful, yes, I mean, some wonderful images in that collection alone. But no, I don't remember sort of having a particular favourite area that I worked on. It just felt sort of good to be finally getting some sort of handle on what was there and hopefully providing something that was going to be of use, you know, that there would be a reasonable legacy there for future users and researchers and what have you. So no, I think just working with all of the material was a joy, really. I think because also having worked with similar material in Sheffield at the centre, it by and large it wasn't. I wasn't coming into something entirely blind, really.
Did you have the title of the collection already decided before you started?
I think we, and by that I think I mean Clive, I think he had decided in making the application, I think I've got this right, that he, yes, that it would be referred to as the Leeds Archive of Vernacular Culture. We used to smile inwardly because Oliver often used to refer to it as the Lavsy, which has a sort of slight laboratorial sort of, whoops, can you still hear me? It was sort of like he couldn't be bothered to say Leeds Archive of Vernacular Culture. It was a bit like in Sheffield, actually, these folklore and folklife collections. You know, the Sheffield one was a bit of a mouthful, so that was always referred to as SECTAL, and then when it became the National Centre of English Cultural Tradition, it became NatSect, you know. That was quite amusing that Oliver referred to it as the Lavsy. But I think Clive would have had that as the title as part of the application for the funding, yeah.
Can you describe a typical day for you at that time?
Okay, yeah. Well, early on, there was a lot of sort of talking, I suppose, amongst ourselves in terms of just how we were going to approach the work ahead, really. So there was quite a bit of planning in terms of the steps we were going to take, the sort of software and the cataloguing software we were going to use. Because at Sheffield, I'd used an ancient system called Idealist. I'm sure it's not going now. It was sort of okay. It wasn't very good at sort of representing the different hierarchies. It was fairly flat. But I'd started to work with that at Sheffield on listing all the student work, the dissertations and theses and whatever. So I do remember in the early days thinking, we'll use that because I know Idealist. But it soon became apparent that just the size of the collection needed something that was a bit more robust and a bit more sort of appropriate in representing the whole collection, really. The early days there were sort of planning meetings and what have you. And then we would have had sort of days of actually sort of getting a handle on just what was there in terms of physically assessing what was there. Clive had input at that point in terms of saying, well, there's stuff in this room and this house and this attic and what have you. But as things sort of settled down and we started to work through the individual sections that we'd highlighted, yes, I tended to be in first because I was only travelling from Sheffield, but to avoid the traffic and what have you, I tended to start a bit earlier so I could leave a bit earlier to pick young daughter up from nursery. Working sometimes with sort of having several things on the go at the same time, really. So it may be that I was working on, you know, you could set a recording going and set that going and sort of check that periodically, but at the same time working on cataloguing a box of something else the other side of the computer. I tended to sort of oversee the audio side of things. And as I said earlier, Catherine, the RA, she worked through the photographs and what have you. And we tended to work sort of straight into the catalogue, if you like. We didn't, as far as I remember, we didn't have any sort of rough catalogue lists, as it were. I think we worked straight in. And we did also, I think, have some discussion about whether how we decided we were going to represent the whole of the collection, whether that works, and there may have been things that we tweaked and what have you. And yeah, we were sort of down in that cellar room with our heads down, working away, really. I mean, such is the material, there would have been, I'm sure, discussions about things that people came across, whether it's in a notebook or a photograph or whatever. Because I think we did all have a sort of shared interest in the collection. Obviously, Johnny had a language dialect background. I had some previous experience of working stuff in Sheffield. Catherine had done previous project work, I think, at Leeds, but not with this sort of material. But yeah, we all seem to sort of gel in that sense in terms of a common aim and what have you. And then yes, I would sort of tootle off a bit earlier, but Catherine would stay on and Johnny was with us. He's probably told you how long, I can't remember. I don't think it was quite a year. But then obviously got the offer of the job nearer to where he was living down south at the BL, and so he left us. And what he'd been doing, I don't remember either of us picking that up, because there was, gosh, would we have? I don't know whether there was any discussion really about whether Johnny would, you know, be replaced, as it were. And he wasn't. So the work that he'd started, particularly picking out stuff from the field notebooks, that must have just sort of stopped, I guess. Yeah, because there was enough else for us to be working on, really. Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit more about the School of English and Institute characters and members of staff that you would have met?
Well, apart from Clive and Oliver, we did have sort of passing dealings with Oliver's superior, who has been the head of Special Collections, whose name I'm afraid I can't remember. But we didn't have a great deal to do with him. Now, there were a couple of, at least one woman who was then working within the School of English. And again, I'm afraid I can't remember her name. and whether she ever was involved in some of our sort of progress meetings, I'm afraid I can't remember.
Did you ever meet Stanley Ellis?
Yes, Stanley did pop in. How that came about, I guess Clive probably would have been in contact with him about having secured the funding for the project and what have you. And obviously a big part of it was the SED material that Stanley was involved in. So at which point Stanley turned up, I can't remember, but I do remember him coming down into the office. I think he was quite sort of pleased in a way that the work was being undertaken, really, and that a sort of younger generation, if you like, were discovering the fruits of his labours and were working with it with a view to sort of raising the profile and introducing it to new people, new researchers. So I think he was quite pleased about that, and he would pop in every now and again and offer what help he could. I think he would sort of make suggestions about, and obviously he was I think he was helpful in helping us identify people that he worked with, other people involved in the SED, and taking that forward in terms of publication and what have you, because that was all sort of new to us, really. So yeah, he was helpful in that sense, I guess he would have probably come to the conference as well. I don't think he spoke, but yes, of that sort of generation. And in terms of SED field workers, he was the main person. There were some other institute people that it was suggested we might try and get hold of, particularly around the time of pulling the conference together towards the end of the project. People like Tony Green, who'd been one of the lecturers at the institute. And whilst we did get a response from him, because Clive wasn't sure whether he would actually respond, he did get back. But I think possibly he felt that was the institute was a chapter of his life that was done, and he didn't feel he wanted or needed to sort of relive it through talking about the institute or whatever and what we were doing. I don't remember any other particular characters that we had contact with from the past life, if you like. It was very much sort of getting down, heads down, and working through the work that we had to do. Yeah.
Did you all spend time socially together as a team?
Outside of working hours, I suppose. No, not really. I don't think we did. Because we sort of had staggered times, as I've sort of already explained a bit about my sort of early start and earlier finish. We didn't really do anything like that in terms of going for a drink afterwards or whatever. After Johnny left to go down to the British Library, I mean, we did keep in touch, and by the time the end of the project, you know, we were still in touch with him, and he obviously came up as one of the speakers. What we did do on occasions, yes, and whether Johnny was around for this, there were several parties, if you like, at Clive's house. He invited us and members of faculty and various postgrad students to his house over in, it's called Ben Ridding. Now, is that the place or is that the name of his house? I don't know whether that's a place. Sort of West Yorkshire. And those were nice because a lot of the people that were invited obviously knew each other, but it was, we were introduced as working on the project and what have you. So that was a nice way of sort of, so yeah, I do remember, now I'm thinking about it, Catherine, Johnny and myself driving over to Clive's place and having a very nice, a very nice sort of afternoon, evening. That, and he did that a couple of times. Might it have been towards the end of the academic year each time when there were perhaps students leaving or something? I can't remember exactly when it was. So that was nice, and we, you know, we met Clive's wife and his son, who was still at home, I think, then, possibly. So that was a nice sort of social thing. But yeah, beyond that, we didn't really, it was probably only once we'd finished the project, Catherine and I particularly sort of kept in touch, and we met up a few times and went to Yorkshire Sculpture Park and had sort of days out with family. I think by that time she had a partner, and then after that she had a baby. So we did a few things after the project, but during, not so much.
And how did things wrap up?
I was offered the job in Sheffield, and right at the end, I think I'd already started in Sheffield, so this would have been about the May time in 2005. I seem to remember there was an event that was held, I think it was in, it was in one of the sort of rather grand reading rooms in the Brotherton, the sort of the wooden shelving and the big hefty wooden tables and what have you. And I think Clive organised, it wasn't quite the same as the conference, but it was a way of sort of rounding things off in terms of just an overview of the project, and what we'd done and what we'd managed to achieve. And because I'd started my new job, I do remember that Catherine more or less sort of took that on. And ultimately she presented. And I think this sort of showed how she had sort of gained in confidence, if you like, because the early sort of presentations we gave, she was a bag of nerves. And I wasn't particularly comfortable either with public speaking, but Catherine fronted this herself in terms of talking through the project, and she was, because I wasn't around for those last few weeks, I didn't sort of actually get involved in that. So it was a bit weird. I sort of was invited back, and I sort of sat there in the audience, as it were. but Catherine was okay with that in terms of presenting. And I suppose, again, that would have been two people within the University of Leeds that Clive wanted to sort of flag up the coming to the end of the project. While I'm saying that, I'm remembering also that we did put on a display in the Brotherton. There were a number of display cabinets that Clive, and I guess this would have been through Oliver as well, was able to requisition, and we had a dedicated space where we displayed a number of items from the archive. So we had an example of a field notebook and photographs and a title page from a student project and stuff like that, you know. And I think also we might have had some panels done, possibly, with the help of the university sort of graphic design. I don't remember a great deal about that, whether I was involved in that, whether again Catherine did that. But it looked good, and the cabinets were ever so heavy. We had to get these sort of sack barrow things to sort of jack them up and sort of move them around, and then decide within the space we had what would be the best sort of things to represent the archive as a whole, you know. Now, when that was, within the 3 years, I can't remember, but it's just come back to me that Again, it was just as a way of raising the profile of the project and the archive, really. Yeah.
Were you involved at all with BBC Voices?
No. No. Didn't have anything to do with that.
That was after you'd left the project?
That was, yes. Yeah. I'm just pausing in case we did have something to do with that and I've forgotten. But no, I think that came after that, yes. Yeah.
What does it mean to you, Robin, to have been part of creating the LABC?
As I said earlier, it was basically my first, shall we say, proper full-time job as an archivist with responsibility for getting physical and intellectual control over a sizeable archive and doing it justice, basically, in terms of the catalogue that we produced, in terms of it being usable and it meaning something to people and representing not only the physical contents of the archive but the context in which it was created, and sort of the value of it, really. I mean, folklore, folk life studies, dialect studies, it's a fairly sort of niche area within academia, if you like, and being married to a folklorist, I know the sort of the difficulty there is in getting those disciplines regarded as sort of worthy, sort of serious academic pursuits. And again, I know John Widdowson has fought this for many decades, really, in terms of getting the recognition for the discipline as an academic pursuit, really. I mean, other countries, North America, Scandinavia, most universities have a folklore department, and it's seen as a very sort of normal thing, really. But the Institute and the Centre at Sheffield, really, in England, were the only two sort of institutions, if you like, that really tried to sort of fly the flag, as it were. And undoubtedly, at undergrad and postgraduate level, there was an interest in the subject. I mean, when I was at Sheffield, John had, you know, the classes were really, really big. There was an interest there to study, because, you know, everyone has folklore. They don't necessarily realise it, but once you start talking about things you did as a child or whatever, or things you believe in now and not walking under ladders or whatever, everyone's got a bit of something like that. So, yeah, to be working on a project that hopefully would add a bit of credence to the discipline was really I was really chuffed about that, and obviously it meant also I could sort of test myself in terms of, yeah, this is a fairly sizable 3-year project. You know, am I going to sort of crumble under the under the strain of it all? Or you know, am I going to be able to sort of think in a reasonably logical, sort of controlled way in terms of how we might approach the project management of it, if you like? I think we did a reasonably good job in the time we had, and there were a number of things that got in our way during the 3 years in terms of time that I had to miss, and Catherine had some health issues as well. So there were sizable chunks when the team weren't all there working together. So that said, I think we did pretty well to cover what we did. Quite how much, you know, after I left Leeds and Catherine got another project job in Leeds, I think, quite how much it's been used and the benefit people have had from having that sort of finding aid there, I honestly don't know. I guess I had to move on, and I quickly became immersed in working in a local authority archive office, and from being able to focus solely on one archive, albeit a large one, and to plan my time and to work through systematically the work, to then going to a busy local authority office with a much more public-facing role in terms of public search room, public inquiries and what have you. And really having to sort of learn quite a lot in quite a short space of time, not only how it operated, but also all of a sudden having to get my head around a lot of different archive sources and family history inquiries and dealing with magistrates courts or coroner's courts or hospital health authority, you know, and there was an awful lot that I had to sort of take on. So in terms of leaving LAVC behind, and I wonder how it's getting on and how it's being received and how it's being used, I didn't sort of revisit it that often to know what our legacy actually has been, really. But I mean, it's certainly obviously good to know that 20 years down the line, it's still there in terms of now being built on with this new project. So I mean, that's pleasing, yeah. And it's nice to know that areas are being able to be addressed that we weren't able to at that time, either because of resources or time, or in some part, our actual knowledge, really. I mean, the recordings that we did onto the mini discs, I was okay with that, but anything more technical than that, and perhaps in terms of, I mean, now it probably would be regarded as, well, they would probably say, well, even then you could have copied them and made audio files, and why didn't you do it MP3 or whatever, if they were existing then, I can't remember, whatever it was. But in all honesty, none of us had the sort of technical knowledge, and Clive didn't sort of push that side of things. So I suppose perhaps we could have done a bit more there that might have made future issues not as much, you know, in terms of it being a bit more readily accessible. But that said, whatever format you do it on is likely to become defunct and needs to be migrated to the next one. So, yeah, we did what we did.
Do you have any standout memories, Robin, or stories about particular items that were interesting to catalogue or difficult or...
Standout items. No, this is going to sound very sort of boring, really, in terms of this. I don't honestly remember a particular sort of wow moment in thinking, oh, I didn't realise this was here type thing. I mean, as I've said before, I think the photographs were a constant source of interest, just because of the number of them and the different subjects that had been photographed. And we were talking earlier, weren't we, about Werner Kissling and his photographic, well, it's a sort of photographic archive within the archive. I mean, he was a proficient photographer, and there's so many fascinating images there, and snapshots literally of a moment of time in Dale's life or whatever. So yeah, those were a constant sort of source of interest, and we probably were sort of poring over those from time to time, you know.
And working with the audio, you did a lot of that.
Yes. I mean, the audio, we had to record in real time, so that was a case of setting the machine going and then periodically checking to make sure there was still a signal and the tape hadn't snarled up in the machine and what have you. So yeah, those were done in real time. So I didn't really have the chance to sort of sit and sort of immerse myself individual sort of fieldwork sessions, if you like, much as I would have liked to, because again, that's just a huge mine of fascinating material there in terms of all sorts of folklore, folklife material that has been recorded. So again, no, I don't remember sort of coming across anything and thinking, wow, you know, it was all wow, really, because at that time, you know, I was so interested, and again, because of being married to a folklorist and having discussions at home about work that she was doing, and becoming immersed in the subject that way as well. All of it was interesting, really. I don't remember ever thinking, despite the faff of driving at the M1 and, you know, finding that three of the lanes were closed and I had to divert or whatever because of a crash, that was a pain. But I don't really ever remember thinking, oh, I've got to go up there today. And I think a bit like with my job now, I don't feel like that now, and I feel fortunate, really, to be in a profession and in a working environment where I do feel sort of lucky to be doing the work I'm doing. And certainly back when I started at Leeds, it was daunting, because at the risk of repeating myself, it was my first big job, so it was daunting. And there were times where I thought, oh, well, I hope I can pull this off. But at the same time, was really chuffed that I'd managed to combine my work as an archivist with subject material that genuinely interested me. You know, I wasn't going somewhere to, I don't know, catalogue something for which I really didn't float my boat at all, and would have made it difficult for me to remain focused and concentrate, you know. So yeah, just very lucky. It's a bit of a cliche. I mean, I was sort of there at the right time, really, and obviously, you know, I was then and still am now really grateful to Clive, particularly, to think of me, really, and to put the bid together, really. I mean, he obviously saw the value of what was still there, and to a certain extent it was languishing, I guess. And obviously he was a member of faculty then and put this bid together, and when he told me that, how much he'd got, I thought, wow, that's a sizable amount of money to get. You know, they must be serious about this. Yeah.
Oh, Robin, you've been so generous with your time.
Well, I hope I haven't mumbled and garbled too much, and whether on replaying this it will make any sense at all.
Not at all. It's been wonderful. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to tell me?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I'd been able to, because several times you've sort of asked about particular characters or particular items. I wish I could sort of think of things, particular examples, but at the moment, no, I can't. It was, as I say, just sort of not all a blur, that's not right, but it was just all nice. All of it was good to work with, and the few people that I worked with that I've been able to remember to tell you about were supportive, and again within the school and the special collections in large, you know, we were well, whatever they might have to think of the material, you know, they were very tactful about it, and we were treated as part of the team and recognised for the work we were doing. So that was gratifying. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much. It's been an absolute privilege.
That's all right. Thank you very much. Okay.